I mean, you're the soccer man.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all soccer people.
This is Roots Pod.
Fisher angling it to the back of the six for Prentice. Did not take long here in the Coliseum. Roots on top in the home opener.
Oakland Roots 2, New Mexico United 1, and Oakland now has its best start ever. Not saying a whole lot after two matches, but also we've never gotten two wins in a row to start a season. So how awesome is that? This is Aaron with the regulars, John and Peter. This is actually kind of a special episode because John was able this week to sit down with the voice of the Oakland Roots, I think you could call him. I'm not sure anyone's the voice of anything now that, radio is sort of on its way out. But I think if anyone could be called the voice of the Oakland Roots, it's Joe Malfa, who John had the pleasure to sit down with earlier this week in the virtual studio. So we have that interview coming up at the end. Stick around for that. We'll also obviously talk about the win over New Mexico United, which I think has everyone dreaming big. I think that is probably an understatement at this point. And then, of course, we have some news about the stadium situation, which a situation which has hung over the head of every Oakland Roots season, it seems, ever. And so there's something else to talk about there. But first, if I may, I was thinking about it this week about the following this week, because our president basically threatened to kill the Iranian soccer team if they showed up for the World Cup, which is just a great look, just a great look. and also, as I was watching the World Baseball Classic, and I just need the men's teams that represent the United States in any sport to stop being so goddamn weird. I just, please, for the love of God, you know, the hockey team at the Olympics, they decide to party with Cash Patel and laugh at the president's terrible sexist jokes and then go to the White House to eat McDonald's. Like, you're professional athletes. Have some self-respect. Come on. And then to watch the baseball team treat the World Baseball Classic like it was like a military exercise or something. I was so and then they let the troops down, obviously. It's just the best part.
There were a number of really, really wonderful takes on that game, but I think my favorite vein of them is that, like, how humiliating is it to pretend that baseball is war and then lose?
And then lose. Oh my God, I know.
Especially to lose to the guys who are having the time of their lives.
That's what really got me. Like, you know, they weren't having fun. They were being mostly successful, but they were miserable about the whole thing. And it's like, this is a game. This is supposed to be a lot of fun. You know, the Italians are playing opera and having espresso in the dugout. Did you guys see that interview with Vinny Pasquantino where he described
beamed up?
Beamed up. Oh, I love that. And obviously the Dominican and the Venezuelan teams were having the time of their lives. And then you've got, you know, on the American team, Cal Raleigh won't shake hands with his Mariners teammates, and they decide to bring Robert O'Neill in to do their pregame pep talk before the Mexico game. Robert, if you're unaware, first of all, thank your lucky stars. He believes himself to be most famous as the guy who killed Osama bin Laden. He is actually most famous as the guy who the other members of SEAL Team 6 think should shut up about killing Osama bin Laden because he didn't do it. And if you're particularly online, he is also famous for stating that effeminate young men would be his concubines were it not for social media. So, I mean, just all around cringe out of the and I guess I start to worry. You know, I started to worry about the soccer team. I feel like the soccer team is probably a less risk there, except that we know that Christian Pulisic is a huge douchebag. And I'm just worried. You know, with the rest of the way we seem to be cocking up this tournament, he should be on a short leash, is all I'm saying, because we have got to get the the men's national teams of all stripes under control. That's just, I wanted to put that out there because it's been on my mind for a few days. Anyway, Oakland Roots. Let's start with the stadium, because that is the newest thing out there. And also because right before we began to record this, John said, and I quote, "I have some things I want to say." So, John, please, the floor is yours for the things regarding the stadium that you would like to say.
Say them.
Well, starting off, bravo, Aaron. I want to let everybody know, you know, this is a very freestyled podcast. So for you to totally go off on all the United States men's national team, just bravo to you. That was great. So anyways, yeah, news that I posted today. For the first time, there is an agenda item on the Port of Oakland's board meeting page regarding negotiations with Oakland Roots. You know, starting off, I want to stress that this does not mean things are close. This is very much the first step of what could be hundreds of steps. You know, we're going to see a lot of board meetings over the next number of years on this matter.
Municipal governments love board meetings.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, if you recall back to my January post, I expressed some optimism over 2027 being a year to watch. You know, from what I've heard since then, we very much are walking that back. You know.
Okay, so hold on. But year to watch in terms of a move or in terms
Yes, a move. I you know, I express
it does seem like knowing that in terms of contract negotiation.
Yeah, it is something to watch more so for the Coliseum. We know that Henry Gardner, JPA executive director, said back in September that 2027 they view as quote unquote highly problematic. It's from based on conversations I've had with a lot of people since then. You know, it looks like you can probably more so expect that the Coliseum is in the immediate future, in the immediate plans. You know, Howard Terminal, there's going to be a lot of, you know, red tape to get through. It's going to take time. So today's post, very much step one of what could be hundreds of steps.
Maybe when he said he thought 2027 was problematic, he was just referring generally to the year 2027, like third year of a second Trump presidency. This is going to be an issue, guys.
Yeah. Everything's an issue. So yeah, that's where we are. I mean, still a lot of reason for optimism. It's, you know, it's very much the wheels are now in motion. The news came out in January. Roots are one of two finalists, which is great news. Now, a couple months later, the wheels are starting to get in motion. So this is going to take time, as we know, in the Bay Area. This isn't Phoenix, to where they can just pop up a stadium whenever, you know, in a matter of months. You know, this isn't Detroit. Detroit is well in the process. It's not Sacramento, where Sacramento's in the process of building their stadium. This is going to take time. So still, reason for optimism, but I wouldn't say that you should be planning in the at least immediate future that Roots will be playing at Howard Terminal.
Okay. All right. Still, big news. I think any movement in that direction is good for the Oakland Roots. The fact that that someone thinks that they are a partner that should be bargained with for something that isn't happening in the next couple of years says something about how their viability is seen. And that's good news, because let's be real, it was not too long ago that we were like, the goal for this season is not to fold. Like, that was literally just 2 years ago. And now they are one of two parties negotiating for tenancy rights at maybe the most sought after piece of property in Oakland.
And top of the league.
And top of the league. Great segue, John. Roots to New Mexico United 1 as a Wolfgang Prentice header in the 7th minute. And then it goes down as an own goal on behalf of Arturo Astorga from New Mexico United. But it was really created by Danny Trejo beating his man to the byline, crossing it back in. I forget, frankly, who took the shot that was saved. A bit of a ping pong situation after that. The ball bounced off of Peter Wilson, then off the New Mexico defender, and then trickled into the net. They all count the same. That was 2. New Mexico got one back, but obviously one is less than 2. So here's Oakland, top of the league, and top of the West. I think if you put everyone together, Louisville City's top of the league, but they just lost their coach. So, like, you probably can't trust them, you know? I don't know that I have seen, with respect to the Oakland Roots, as much optimism about as many different aspects of this team as was expressed in the aftermath of this win over New Mexico United, maybe ever. I think the only other match that might have generated this kind of positive reaction among the fan base was that win a couple of years ago at Indy 11, where they just smoked them. Which I suppose is a cautionary tale, but there's so many good things to talk about in this performance, in the 2 performances over the course of the season. On the blog, Luis de Guzman, he highlighted the Roots' physicality, and the Roots have been the more physical of the 2 teams in both of the matches they've played so far. But you know, our friend Jack was highlighting on the Discord how technical the team seems to be playing right now, like how technically proficient in a way that I think is completely foreign to the Oakland Roots experience. And it's just like, it's hard to fathom that they're doing so well in so many different areas right now. And it's just after 2 matches into the season. I mean, it's awesome. I don't know what else there is to say about it.
It's crazy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I've ever felt this amount of optimism amongst the fan base, you know, not just me. And if you want to talk about optimistic, just wait until you listen to Joe Malfa's segment. The hopium is on high, and he is going to make you guys listeners be like, "Oh man, we're going to win it fucking all." But but so you think we're optimistic, just wait till you get the Joe segment. I mean back to that first goal, I mean, what a well-worked goal that was. I mean, from Tommy McCabe and a just a absolutely beautiful touch pass from Tyler Gibson with his back heel, just puts it on a platter from Mark Fisher, and then Mark Fisher lands maybe one of the best passes I've seen a Roots player make, you know, Memo Diaz included. Like, that was a hard, very well executed pass. Like, it was from distance, it was over a defender, it was between 2 defenders, and then a perfect header by Wolfgang Prentice. You know, that goal was so impressive. And then, you know, now to the next goal, you know, Trejo just absolutely turns his man inside out down the right side and then centers a perfect pass to Jackson Keel, is the name. Who sends a great shot on his first touch, just redirects it, you know, uses the pace of the ball from Trejo's pass to put it on net, forces a diving save, goes into Peter Wilson, the ball bounces off Peter Wilson in the defender, and then goes into the net. I mean, Trejo himself, I mean, how great has he looked in his limited amount of minutes? I mean, he came on in the 70th or 71st against Monterey, instant impact, comes on in the 60th here, instant impact, leads to the goal, almost scored against Monterey too. He was clearly offside, but still. So just the aspects with this team, I mean, like, they're playing great, and it could get better. You know, Vallot is out. You know, when Vallot comes back, that's, you know, some more goals and assists on the field. You know, with that, Bitash has looked great. Keegan Tingey at right back, that adds more quality at that position. But how can you take out Mark Fisher with how he's playing? And then, and then when Trejo is ready for a full 90, which from what it sounds like, Ryan Martin believes he is ready for a full 90. Like, this team is, there's so much that's going well. And I think one of you guys, I think, Aaron, you made the point in the preseason that a lot depends on if this team can stay healthy. And that still remains true. You know, we still need to get Vallot back. We still, you know, if Mark Fisher goes down, you're ultra, ultra thin at that outside back spot. So, you know, things to keep an eye on, but things are looking high and things are looking like they can get even better and take one, two, a few more steps.
I was seeing this on the Discord. I don't think that I have ever seen a Roots defense absorb the kind of pressure they absorbed from New Mexico over the course of that game. You know, they scored that early goal, and I think that combined with the fact that New Mexico are good meant that New Mexico was possessing the ball for a huge amount of the game. And they didn't even really create many dangerous chances. You know, it wasn't like last-ditch defending is what was stopping them. You know, the outside backs were doing their job. Garcia and Edwards were stout. And Spiegel didn't have that much to do. He did what he had to do. I just really... And that also seems like... the defense also seems like something that has room to get better. You know, I feel like that's something you don't normally say about a team that has a shutout in a game where they conceded only one, but I think that those guys have room to grow, to learn to play with each other, and that's also very exciting. Garcia had 10 clearances in this game, and I don't even remember most of them being under significant duress. I think that he just very calmly mopped up a lot of New Mexico attacks. Really impressed with those guys. And I think you're exactly right. You can see the ways in which the attack has room to grow. Vallot coming back, but also just the guys getting to know each other better. You know, I feel like we're seeing early season Wilson, not late season Wilson. And maybe he's just a late season guy, in which case, keep winning games now because we'll definitely win them when he turns on.
Yeah, and you know, I think that Trejo coming onto the field is definitely going to help Peter Wilson, especially when you have a quality like, you know, say you have Wolfgang, Trejo, and Peter Wilson on the field at the same time. Like, that's a lot of speed. That's a lot of attacking power there. You know, that's going to open up the field for Peter Wilson, especially when Trejo's out there. Like, you got another star player on your offense that these teams are going to have to account for. That's going to open up the field for Wilson. You know, if teams have been able, you know, Monterey definitely put a lot of their focus on Peter Wilson. I think, you know, we could assume that when teams are preparing for Roots in these first games, you know, Peter Wilson is at the top of the list. You know, you have to plan for the striker, the Golden Boot winning striker. So, you know, I'm excited to see how this offense can develop, especially when Trejo's on the field, especially when Vallot is on the field. And with that, Bitash is playing really well. You know, when you add Bitash, give him Trejo, give him Peter Wilson, and add Wolfgang to the mix, you got a lot of serviceable players there. So, yeah,
Bobosi, Bitash, Trejo,
we haven't even Wilson. Talked about him. Yeah.
That group of five on the field at the same time. I mean, it gives you something to dream about. You know, there have been years, like the last couple of years specifically, right, where the Roots put out what is for them a very attacking lineup, and it's still a struggle to get the second goal. And you just don't get the sense, obviously, right now. And actually, you know, Luis wrote this on the blog, right? That if there's something we have questions about, right, as short-term offense, like it, until we know that Velo and Trejo are a go for 75 minutes, right, there's still going to be some questions, but there's reason to dream here because the defense is, I mean, God, New Mexico had what, 60, 62% possession or something like that in this match. And according to all the stat heads, they didn't even generate a full expected goal over the course of the match. Depending on who you're looking at, it's 0.8 or 0.9. I mean, that I think speaks very well of the back line. And to Peter's point, there were not a lot of great chances, despite the fact that New Mexico was basically had the upper hand for most of the game possession wise. They couldn't really break through. So it's great to be in this position that you can see where the improvement's going to come from and already have two wins under your belt. I mean, you can't ask for anything more as a fan, as a player, as a member of the coaching staff, maybe as a member of the front office. I don't know what they ask for anyway, but in terms of the product on the field, this is as good as it could be right now.
I think that, so, I mean, you mentioned Bobosi. I mean, he made the USL team of the week. I think rightfully so. They highlighted that he had four interceptions, which I think was great. I was just looking at his heat map. It's like a perfect distribution. He was everywhere. He was in the attacking left, the attacking right. He contributed everywhere on defense, and he's just all over the center circle. McCabe, again, I mean, has this like deep-lying metronome. He had 63 touches. I think he had more passes than any other midfielder. I think that on both teams, the defenders ended up having a lot of passes. But McCabe, I think, led midfielders for both teams. And, you know, that Prentice goal, I feel like we haven't seen Prentice score goals like that. And I don't know if he's likely to score many more like that. But you always feel like, in addition to the points it won us, if you force your opponent to prepare for something that isn't actually in part of your game plan, you're freeing up your actual game plan. And, you know, I think that it is a really wonderful goal, and one that I don't know that I thought he had in his locker. And he is, it's so fun to see him turn into a USL championship quality player. You know, he isn't a guy who's at this point, it's like his spot in this team isn't because he's an academy grad. His spot is in this team because he deserves to be playing, starting for a USL championship team. And that's awesome. That's really, at a certain point, that now seems like the best thing that our youth development has produced, right? And I don't think many of us would have been surprised to hear that at the beginning of last season. Obviously, last season he produced a lot, particularly in the early days. But, you know, that's great for him. We haven't mentioned Julian Bravo, who I thought had another very solid game. Looks like he's starting left back, and that's and not a weak link in any way. He's really contributing, and that, I mean, there's just nothing bad to say about the defense from last game.
Okay, so we've said something positive about almost literally everyone who saw the field. John, if you could just come full circle for us, we need something for Tyler Gibson and Raphael Spiegel. Take it away.
Tyler Gibson has honestly really impressed me. You know, it's that was that one player that everybody had a question mark on, like, oh, how does he fit in as a wide player? And evident by these first two games is he is a clear catalyst in this system. I mean, he allows the defense to pinch. He's able to build out. I mean, the very intuitive play on that goal, I mean, it doesn't happen without him. Like, what a quality pass to Mark Fisher that was, you know, he's another player that you wonder, like, it's hard to drop him, you know, when the whole roster is available. Martin is going to have a lot of hard choices to make, and thank God. It's such a great problem to have, right? Who was the last one? Spiegel. I think it was interesting, and I like the honesty from Ryan Martin in the post-game press conference. Goes right out and declares Spiegel is the starter next game. I still think that, you know, that's still a position to watch. I'm still unconvinced that the starting goalkeeper is currently on this roster. Joe Malfa will essentially say the same in his segment. So, but still, you know, playing pretty well. One clean sheet under his belt. He's a great passer. That's coming into play in both of these games. It's going to continue being a piece for Ryan Martin's attack, starting, you know, out of the back with Spiegel. So, you know, we will see, but not much complaints right now, right?
That's right. Not a whole lot to complain about. And you've teased it a couple of times now. So we're just going to get right to your interview with Joe and let you guys take us home here real quick. Of course, this cup coming weekend, Oakland Roots Phoenix Rising will be on the road at Phoenix Rising. Phoenix actually lacks a league win so far this season, but is coming off a 4-0 Open Cup win over San Ramon FC. So maybe that has done something for them. They do have a lot of continuity, but they're not coming off of a one of those vintage Phoenix Rising seasons, you might say. And so I don't know how much the continuity is actually doing for them. But anyway, they're all 1-1 so far, and I think at this point you have to take the Roots in this matchup.
Oh, so yeah, for sure.
Rapid fire. Here we go. John, score prediction.
Well, we know Phoenix is dealing with some injuries right now. Makes me wonder what Pamadou Ka had them doing in the preseason. Plus, they're on short rest. Had Charlie Dennis in the match. Other starters, I believe. But Charlie, I'm pretty sure, is a starter.
Charlie was the captain of the Open Cup match.
Yeah.
For that team. So, but he doesn't play much regularly, which continues to baffle me. But it's neither here nor there. Mm-hmm.
I'm going 3-1. Let's get it.
3-1. Peter.
I'm going 2-0. I don't have... I mean, based on two results, it doesn't look like there's a whole lot that Phoenix's attack is doing. I mean, they haven't gotten shut out, but one goal each in their two games. And I'm, you know, I'm buying Roots defense right now.
I'll go 3-2, you know, just because there's always a zig when you expect a zag at this level, and a couple of stupid goals leak in, but I really got a lot of faith in the Oakland Roots attack, and this doesn't feel like the game where this run comes to an end. All right, as now heavily teased, John sat down with Joe Malfa earlier this week. Here is their interview.
All right, joining the podcast, you've definitely heard his voice before if you're tuning into Roots games over the years. I'm pleased to welcome Joe Malfa. Joe, thank you for coming on. How are you?
No, thank you for having me. It's been good to get the season going again. I'm doing well. I'm coping with being very busy again. And interesting, everybody always asks me, like, you know, friends, family, who I guess don't understand or fully grasp what I do. They're always asking, how's it going? And I'm like, in the off season, it's nice because I'm not doing anything. And then it's like being a teacher in the summer. And then all of a sudden, bam, it's back. It's week one. It's week two. It's week three. It doesn't stop now until hopefully for the Roots and for you guys, hopefully it doesn't stop until the end of November. So we keep rolling now. So it's been good to be busy, feeling good. Family's good. Happy to jump on and talk some Roots with you guys.
Yeah, I can definitely feel that. The end of February until now, mid-March, it is just a whirlwind. just going back to, I was watching the Backheeled preseason podcast that you were on. You were very complimentary of Roots, you know, continuously praising them. So now two games in, just what are you seeing from Roots that you think justifies that?
Two wins. That's for starters. That's the most important thing, right? You play to win the game, and they've won both of them. But I think the biggest thing to be encouraged about is there's an identity and a style. And I'm sure we'll dive into some of the intricacies of recent Roots history, but that hasn't been the case. Like, you had a few seasons in a row there where there was a midseason coaching change. And because of that, the identity shifted. And with no disrespect to the two coaches I'm about to mention, but Noah Delgado and Gavin Glinton, two guys who philosophically were of the school of thought that you needed to adapt on a week-to-week basis to your opponent rather than having a style and imposing your will. Benny Failhaber subscribed to the latter and brought in an identity and tried to instill it, but it was a little bit too little too late. So for the first time, and 2 weeks in now, it's very clear Oakland has an identity. There's a core of players. Ryan Martin has a vision, and it's manifested in two wins. So I mean, we can go on about, you know, how this player's played and that player's played and little things, but I think the biggest takeaway from the first two games and going back to that Backfield podcast, like, what stuck out through 2 weeks is they have an identity, they have a vision, it's cohesive, and it's manifested itself in two wins against two, well, Monterey Bay, I guess, is a wild card coming into the year, but against at least one team in New Mexico who is thought to be a contender this year, not just in the Western Conference, but for the championship overall. So, this isn't like the Roots, you know, came out and earned wins against, you know, the going back a few years. It's not like they beat, you know, 2021 Las Vegas Lights and 2020 New York Red Bulls too here, right? Like, they beat a team that could be at the playoff line in Monterey Bay and a team that could be atop the standings in New Mexico. So it's two impressive wins, and I think it really boils down to a vision and just an overall identity that they could actually hang their hat on this year.
Yeah, what have you picked up from Ryan Martin and your talks with him so far this season and how he's developed as a coach?
I think the biggest thing that we chatted about the other day, and we're fortunate to be able to catch up with these coaches on a weekly basis just for some insight ahead of these games, the biggest thing that stuck out was he hasn't changed in his approach from Loudoun to Oakland. Why do I think that's big? I think there's been coaches around this league who have gone from jobs where maybe they didn't have the resources into jobs where they then do have the resources, and they change their line of thinking. They think, oh, I just have money that I can throw at problems now, and they sort of compromise who they are and what they've been and what kind of got them to the dance. Ryan Martin has always been a person-first type of coach. Who are you? What's your character like? Who are you as a person? That kind of thing. And then how do you fit my system? How can I best use you? And so on and so forth. And part of his background as a scout and in the academy with DC United spearheading that and their talent acquisition, you saw it at Loudoun too. Like, every couple of years, there was somebody that he was picking up from Africa that was on nobody's radar that he plopped in and was a starter for them. Like, he searches far and wide, and at his core, he's good at diagnosing talent. He's good at diagnosing people and, I guess, melding it all together then onto the field with his tactics, with his brain, with his just acumen for the game. He hasn't compromised that just because he has more resources now at Oakland. He is still operating with the Roots as he operated at Loudoun, as he operated before then in the Academy of DC United, and as an assistant coach at Cincinnati before then. He is operating the same way. He just now has the resources to take it to the next level. And that really stuck out to me, that he addressed the fact that he is still approaching the Roots as he approached his past and what made him successful at Loudoun, where he was able to do a lot with a little. I don't think there was anybody in the league over the last few years who was able to get as much bang for his buck, for lack of a better way to put it, with the situation he was given than Ryan Martin. And now he actually has an organization that is there to support him. If he would have come into the conversation and, I don't know, said something different, I would have maybe raised an eyebrow, like, why are you changing who you are now? But this is who he's been. This is what's gotten him here. And he is just now taking it to the Roots.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting you say that, how Roots can support him, because that really wasn't the case over the years. You know, as you know, you've covered this team since they entered the USL Championship. I think you broadcasted their very first game in 2021. And, you know, boy, how different is this operation? You know, talk about the organization's growth, you know, from that time, from your perspective.
It's interesting. I think part of it is timing, and part of it is just poor player scouting, because through the years, I guess your original point there about the resources and the support, through the years, like, they've made signings that they thought were good signings and were going to help the group. Think back to when they brought in a late career Quincy Ameriquois and when they brought in a late career Dom Dwyer. Like, they've always seemingly gone for it in that regard and spent money in that regard without being privy to what exactly these players were earning and things like that. But just on a surface level, it looked like they were spending. It just always felt like they were spending in the wrong places and on the wrong people, because timing-wise, the head coach was never in place. You know, just from the very beginning, Dario Pott was the head coach, never even coached a game. Jordan Farrell comes in with no coaching experience, does well enough to get them into the playoffs. Then you fast forward, and then taking over is Juan Guerra, and he back channels his way to Phoenix mid-season. So Noah Delgado has to step in mid-season. But he did well enough at the end of the season, Noah, to earn another season. But then in that season, he then stumbled, and then we go to Gavin Glinton. So like, it was just this never-ending cycle of a coach not making it through the full season in that second season. And because of that, the money they did spend on players for the previous coach, now that player didn't fit the new coach's system. And it was just so on and so forth. And that was something that Benny Failhaber, I think, toward the end of last season, when the writing started to seem on the wall that the Roots weren't making the playoffs, Benny was very honest, very brutally honest. Very brutally honest in post-game press conferences about, I guess, how money was spent and how things were handled. Look, because they clearly opened the checkbook to bring in Danny Trejo mid-season last year. So, like, there's always been that initiative, but the stars have never aligned. It was always a coach trying to play catch-up with the roster that he was given and not the roster he wanted. This is the first time, to your point, that everything is finally aligned, where the coach is there. He's fully crafted the roster the way he wants to, with a lot of players he's familiar with. They've clearly spent on this roster. And I guess to bring it all full circle, at the very beginning, at the core, the Roots are a purpose-driven organization that's community first. And I think as time went on, just this is my two cents from watching from afar and sort of being entrenched in it with calling the games, I think at some point there was a realization that you can't quite satisfy all the goals you have for the community if the team is struggling and you don't have people at the games. You can do all the best things in the world for the community as an organization, but if you are finishing in last place every year, the reality is people don't want to support a team that's losing, and they don't want to be a part of those the environment and those games. They're not going to be there as much, and if you have fewer fans, you have less money, you have less eyeballs, you have less ability to get back to the core, which is being a purpose-driven, community-based organization. Now I think the stars have finally aligned top to bottom, where they can satisfy all the off-field goals for what they have set out to do and all the great endeavors that they have put forth, while also winning games, and those two things go hand in hand. You had 15,000-ish fans there the other night, and now they see a team that's 2-0 and a team that very well may be one of the top three teams in the Western Conference. So whereas maybe last year toward the end of the season, I don't know, maybe they were getting 7,000-8,000 depending on the night. Mm-hmm. Fast forward to that time of the year this year, you're probably still getting 15,000. Maybe you are getting upward to 20,000 depending on how good they actually are. And now everything is able to sort of feed off of that. So it's a long-winded answer to your question from what it was to what it is. And I think it really just boils down to alignment and the timing finally syncing up with having a true, proper veteran head coach of this league and realizing that winning also has to be at the heart of the team in order to satisfy the other goals as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even beyond roster building, you know, those first few years were really, really rough, you know, from coaching changes to playing at Laney, then playing at Las Positas College, then playing at Hayward. And, you know, following this league, we've seen teams die while I've been covering the team. You know, from your perspective, you know, were you looking in at 2021 like, oh, you know, this could go south really quickly? Just what were your thoughts at the time?
There was certainly an aspect of that. I think it was, I don't think I was fully out on it just because I was also new at the time. So I graduated from the University of Maryland in December of 2019. And then I just started covering the league as a college hire in February of 2020. So right into COVID, and then I came back, and my first season calling USL was I use quotation marks around season. My first season was the last like 3 month sprint of 2020 when they were like grouped into regions and it was just a whole mess. My first full season was 2021 when the Roots came in. So all I knew was COVID times and teams that folded partly because of COVID and kind of dealing with the financial hardships that came with that. So I think to your question, I didn't really think that because I was too naive to know. Okay. If you would have put 2026 Joe Malpha back into 2021 Joe Malpha and presented that version of the Roots to him, I think the answer to your question was, yeah, I would have been pretty worried, to say the least. But it always felt like the ambition was there, to the point that it would never die. And some of the teams that have gone by the wayside in this league, I don't mean to pick on this organization, but it's one that came to mind, RGV, right? Like it never felt like the ambition was there from the front office. It never really felt like they had the fan support. It always felt maybe that it was going that way. But for the Roots, the ambition always seemed to be there from the front office. And even when the team wasn't great, the fans were great. So it always felt like there was enough there to keep it afloat, even when times got tough. And I think, you know, at a point now where the Pro Rel is on the horizon and Division One is on the horizon, this is also something, you know, we touched on in that Backfield podcast. Like, this year almost feels like an audition for that. And now to go from that point in 2021 where it felt like, oh, maybe, I don't know, this could go really badly, to now 5 years later, you're talking about a team that has the coach, has the ability to spend, has the ambition, has a stadium where they're already getting 15 to 20,000 on a really, really good day, has desire to build a new stadium and has the city backing on that. Like, you could start really connecting all those dots in a way, and you can't put the cart ahead of the horse. Like, a lot of things can happen between now and whenever the decisions are made as far as which teams go D1, but it's crazy how quickly it's gone down, or how quickly it's gone up rather, from what it was in 2021, where you're rolling out a carpet on top of turf and you cancel the Sacramento game because the pieces weren't fitting together properly and things like that, to now maybe being on the horizon of, you know, who knows, of Pro Rail, of D1, of a new stadium, where the renderings look fantastic. So like it's come a long way.
Yeah. I mean, with that, I've been telling Roots fans that, you know, this season may go, you know, very well, but my eyes are on 2027, 2028 as that championship window. Just kind of reflect on that. What do you think?
I don't think you have to punt on it, to be honest. Like, I think we've seen in this league in recent years, if you have good coaching and you have a seat at the table in the playoffs, anybody can do it. I mean, last year was kind of a rare year where the top seed in the West in Tulsa made it all the way through.
Right.
Pittsburgh was very fortunate that Louisville and Charleston were both knocked out in the first round, and then they were able to make it themselves. But to that point, like, if you're in, you have a chance. Simply put, like, you all right, you say 2027, 2028 is what you're looking at as a championship window. Well, sure, maybe if, I don't know, if, look, the two wins from two games is fantastic, but maybe the reality is the Roots coming fourth in the Western Conference, for example. And Louisville's a juggernaut again in the East, and Charleston's a juggernaut again in the East, and rival Sacramento turns out to be a juggernaut in the West. Well, there's a chance you might not have to beat any of those teams to win a championship, and you just have to stay afloat. Look at what Phoenix did in 2023. Like, that wasn't a Charleston team that was a valid, true top contender. Phoenix barely snuck into the playoffs, but they got hot at the right time with the right pieces, and I know he's a sore subject for Roots fans, but a good coach in Juan Guerra. The Roots have all of those pieces, and I think one of the most underrated aspects of team building in this league is depth, because it is sort of a war of attrition come the end of the season. Who's healthy, who's not? I think you could draw a direct line among some of those juggernaut-ish teams that fell short of their goals, and it's because of injury. This Roots team right now is deep. I mean, they're two wins from two games. We haven't seen Florian Vallot. We haven't seen Keegan Tingey. Those are two guys who, when healthy, you put in marker as starters in this Ryan Martin team. And then you start having the questions of, well, who are you taking out? Because the starting lineup that's been put forth the last couple games is a really damn good starting lineup. And, oh, by the way, Nevel Hackshaw didn't start. Oh, by the way, Danny Trejo didn't start. So you start going down the list, and even a kid like Aliel Masnaoui, who has a bright future in this league and I think abroad, hasn't even sniffed a moment yet. Wolfgang Prentice is still building on last year. So you go down the list, and there's guys who haven't seen the field yet. There's guys who maybe aren't even close to seeing the field. You always know this time of year, until the MLS rosters sort of shake out in mid-April, there's going to be guys who shake free who get added to the roster still. I think the biggest question right now is in goal with McIntosh and Spiegel, but I think that's to your original point. Like, I don't think it has to be 27 or 28, and I don't want to overinflate, you know, fans' aspirations here in 2026 just because of two games.
You bought the fire there.
No, I genuinely think, like, I don't think you have to be that pessimistic. I think the top end talent is there, the depth is there, the vision and coaching from Ryan Martin is there. In a league where you don't have to be number one in the regular season, all you got to do is you don't want to incentivize mediocrity or being just better than average, but all you got to do is be like a four seed, give yourself one home game, and then after that, whatever happens, happens. So, given that that is the path forward, and you don't need to be number one in the regular season, all the pieces are there to do it already this year if they stay healthy and if they continue on their trajectory.
And we got a few mailing questions here. What is your favorite Roots goal call?
Oh, okay. So Tommy Huddle, who's Mr. PR for the Roots, he and I like have always gone back and forth on this. And it kind of stems to like what you'd also consider like maybe the best moment or best win for the Roots. He and I have disagreed. I've always sort of thought that like that playoff win in El Paso that first year was like top notch. And there's been a couple of games and moments like that. But I think for the specificity of the question, favorite goal call, not favorite win or favorite moment, Tommy's favorite win and favorite game is the win against Sacramento where Emre Clemente scored the game winner. Yeah. And from a goal call perspective, that is my favorite because the crowd goes nuts. He jumps into the crowd. It's an unlikely goal scorer. In the first ever season series with Sacramento, it clinches the derby for the season. Like there was so much in that moment. That's the first one that comes to mind. The second one that comes to mind a lot more recently was Peter Wilson's golden boot goal. From a selfish broadcaster's perspective, I thought I nailed that call. Might pat myself on the back. I usually don't ever do that. I usually have terrible imposter syndrome and think that everything is bad and could have been better. But for some reason, and that play wasn't even one of those where you knew he was going to score. Like it was kind of on an odd angle. The ball was coming at an odd speed. Just had a feeling that it was going to go in. And I kind of cheated on it a little bit and I got up real quick and I like just went with it. And then the crowd took it. That one sticks out more recently, but that one, and I think the Emre goal over Sacramento, those are the two big ones that stick out.
Well, I can tell you, Joe, all the Roots fans think you're great. You are the favorite broadcaster amongst the fan base. So
thank you. I will say, I appreciate that. I will say, I think I waded into some bad waters this week because E40, we showed him at halftime and I made the mistake of saying Oakland zone, just like a slip of the tongue in the moment. And he's not actually from Oakland.
Yes,
and
yes.
I did hear about that from fans that he's from 20 miles away. And as somebody who's not from there, Tommy has always educated me on, I guess, some of the ins and outs of like how territorial people from Oakland and the Bay Area, but more specifically Oakland, are. So in that moment, I said it because like he was wearing all the Roots stuff and that kind of thing. And I knew that he was like from close by, but I didn't realize he wasn't from actually in Oakland. So I learned that. So Roots fans got on me this week, but it's okay. And I know I won't do it next time unless they are actually from Oakland. So I appreciate that though.
And what do you like about the USL Championship? What do you think makes it unique from other leagues?
Oh, the communities. I mean, not to say that like MLS doesn't have a community aspect. There's been some really good markets that they've gone into over the last few years, like Cincinnati and Nashville and places like that, where you could sense a connection between the community and the team. But it's just more intimate, I think, at the USL level. Even at places where you don't necessarily have the largest capacity stadium, right? Like, okay, you guys got 15,000 the other night, and if the stars align, there could be times that you guys get up over 20,000 in the Coliseum. But, you know, 7,000 in Pittsburgh in that tight environment is also awesome. And like that community aspect, you could look at a lot of teams around. Like there's certainly teams that lag behind in the league, but by and large, that community aspect is there at the grassroots level, where it's not just a, you can't accidentally end up there, if that makes sense. Like mm-hmm. you could accidentally end up at an MLS game or something like that, since it's larger scale, since it's more commercial. You probably can't accidentally end up at a Detroit City FC game or at an Oakland Roots game. Like you're going there with intent. And when you're going to a place like that with intent and passion, it creates a better environment. And I think that's something that sticks out about USL Championship.
And last one, what's a city you would like to see the USL go into, or maybe a team that's coming up in future years that you would be, that you're excited about?
That's a good question. Let's see. So, you know, I'm going to shout out, and I hope I don't tick anybody off with this, and I'm saying this without any inside knowledge of any teams that are coming down the pipeline. Mm-hmm. But to this specific question in this moment, and sorry to anybody if I'm jumping the, again, I have no inside knowledge of anything. Vermont Green really sticks out. My mind is on Open Cup because Open Cup comes back here now this week. Last year, I had a chance to call a few Portland Hearts of Pine games in League One. And so up there in Maine, up there in the Northeast in New England, Vermont is also up there. And they just had a nice little run where they, you know, Vermont, the Catamounts won the College Cup 2 years ago. And Vermont Green had those couple of upsets in the Open Cup. And they were selling out every game in that mini run that they had. It seems like there's communities like that where, even at the USL League 2 level, where you're not even professional yet, you're mm-hmm. selling out games. That is impressive.
That is.
So a community like that sort of really, really turns some heads. And the other one is in Annapolis, the Blues. Yeah, the Annapolis Blues FC, I believe it is. Dave Johnson, former broadcaster for DC United and still radio broadcaster for DC United. He's one of the founders and owners of that club, I believe his title is. And I haven't gone to college at Maryland and haven't ton of friends still in the area. I've kept an eye on them. They play at the Naval Academy Stadium, and like they've same thing. Like they do a great job selling out already, just at the USL 2 level, putting their best feet forward in Open Cup and things like that. Where it just feels like a matter of time before there is that next jump for a program like that. And you know, you can get into the nerdy side of it and look at TV ratings for Premier League and things like that. Baltimore, Annapolis, that area of Maryland, they're always at like the top of the charge for TV viewership too. So yeah. It just feels like there's a great soccer market to tap into in that area. So yeah, I'll give you those two, the Annapolis team in USL 2 and the Vermont team in USL 2. Again, if any people in the league office listen to this and get mad at me because I might've tipped their hand, I genuinely have no idea. This is just me going based off of like some of the things I see on social media and those crowds looking awesome. So those two come to mind.
Awesome. Well, hey, Joe, that's all I got for you. Really appreciate you taking the time. It was a lot of fun.
No, please do it again this season. I'm not trying to like overhype the Roos for fans this year, but this feels different from the last few years, and it feels like it could be something special where I think if there was ever a time to get into it, it could be this year. And one more thing that I do want to say before yeah. I go, Coach John Beam, who was shot recently and yeah. lost in the Oakland community. I don't know if anybody listening to this was at the home game the other day, but I was talking to Tommy and the PR staff for the Roots. They played a tribute video and the whole two claps ready, ready thing that Coach was known for. They are trying to make a push to make that an actual tradition in the stadium before kickoff. And it kind of caught on a little bit in the season opener. But they're trying to get the word out to make it a thing. We're going to have a segment on the KTVU show this week. Okay. Sort of highlighting it. And then the hope is for the following week, that home game, I believe, against Orange County on the 28th, that it kind of raises to another level and more of the stadium gets into it. So if you're going to that home game on the 28th, keep an eye on the video board, keep an eye on that, and hope you get to enjoy plenty of Roots games this year.
Awesome. Well, you heard it, Roots fans. All right, Joe. Thank you again.
Thank you. Yep.